Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
My concern is for the police officers and firefighters, teachers and sanitation workers, and everyone else who lives in our neighborhoods, shops on our main streets, and keeps our city strong. They get paid by the taxes that the financial industry generates.
I think the mayor's got those spring allergies that are going around. All this week, we've been trying to dig deep below the political rhetoric and the bank reform debate to illuminate the underlying economics and uncertainties. As the weekend approaches, we'll take one more stab at it now with a look at why President Obama and Mayor Bloomberg disagree about the impact of the bank reform bills on New York. These new laws would have national and global impact, but with the New York economy so dependent on Wall Street, it has tremendous local implications as well. The usual stats we hear are that Wall Street accounts for 8% of the jobs in New York, but 40% of the tax revenue. So what the government does to investment banks that we love to hate has implications, as the mayor was saying, for schools and healthcare and the arts that we love to love. After the president spoke at Cooper Union yesterday, the mayor said he agrees with 90% of what the president is proposing. That includes a public exchange for trading derivatives and the creation of a consumer financial protection agency, which the Republicans are opposing. But the mayor disagrees with at least one central proposal in the bills, the so-called Volcker Rule, to ban proprietary trading, in other words, investment firms making bets on the same deals that they're selling to customers. Sometimes they bet against their customers, as is alleged in the Goldman Sachs fraud charge, creating a basic conflict of interest. But the mayor says this should be seen as normal and acceptable. And without it, jobs will be driven to London and Tokyo and Geneva and Shanghai. On the other hand, the financial meltdown of the last year and a half has been horrible for New York. So the hands-off approach turned out to have its risks for our area, too. So what to do? What to support if your main concern is local jobs and the local economy? Joining us first, a supporter of the mayor's positions, pretty much, Nicole Gelinas, contributing editor to the Manhattan Institute's City Journal and author of After the Fall, Saving Capitalism from Wall Street and Washington. Nicole, so nice to have you back on WNYC. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian. Nice to be back. Thank you.
Can you explain more deeply than I did what proprietary trading is? I think a lot of listeners have been hearing the term a lot these days without really understanding it. The kind of trading that President Obama would like to ban, but the mayor wouldn't.
Sure. Most people, when they think of an investment bank, they think of the bank advising its clients. You come, you want to do a merger, you want advice from the bank, you want help with financing the merger, or you come, you want to buy stocks and bonds, someone else wants to sell stocks and bonds, and the bank is in the middle. This, by contrast, is the bank taking money from its lenders, its bondholders, in some cases its depositors, if it's a bank like J.P. Morgan Chase, where it's hard to separate all of these sources of funds, and using this money to make its own investments, profit on day-to-day fluctuations in the value of securities, borrow a tremendous amount of money, magnify very small profits with a lot of borrowed money. So it certainly can be a very risky activity.
And Goldman Sachs, to take this high-profile example, is accused of fraud by the FCC for not telling its customers that it was involved in betting against a kind of mortgage derivative that wound up going bad. What kind of proprietary trading would not have a conflict of interest if a stockbroker, let's say, is trying to sell me an investment that his own company created and that his own company might be betting against?
Well, that's an interesting case, and I'm glad that you brought it up because it shows that maybe the ban on proprietary trading, the banks will find a way around this. For example, although the Goldman case is very early, they've said many different things, some of them contradictory. Their supporters have done the same. It is quite likely that we will see them argue that this was not proprietary trading. In other words, that they were being an old fashioned market maker. This guy on one side wanted to sell the security. This investment bank from Europe on the other side wanted to buy it. I think that's a wrong argument, and I don't want to get too much into the detail. I think that they were doing some very bad things here, but I don't think that the ban on proprietary trading would have prevented it, because it would not have prevented them from structuring highly customized securities for both sides of the trade really under cover of opacity. The one thing that, that would have the best chance of preventing that is putting these derivative securities on public exchanges. You know, the goal should not be for these banks to hoard information by making sure that no derivative looks anything like any other derivative. I mean, those are snowflakes. Those are not markets. And moving these things into the public where they have to simplify them so the exchange will accept them, that will get rid of a good deal of this opacity, let investors compare prices.
So outside of the Goldman example, where fraud is alleged because of the lack of transparency, on a routine basis, how is it not a conflict of interest if a stockbroker is trying to sell me an investment that his own company created and that that company may be betting against, at least in part?
Well, there's always going to be conflicts of interest in banking, some legal, some manageable, some obviously not legal in the alleged case, in this case, and some not very manageable, even if they are legal. But the focus on the proprietary trading does not eliminate these risks. For example, a bank could still have its own long-term investments in mortgage-backed securities. You know, it is very discretionary what is held short-term and what is held long-term. The banks are always going to have conflicts of interest. And the problem with this rule, and I think what the mayor is saying, is that this is something where you have American subsidiaries of European banks, Asian banks. They've always had global banks. You've got the commercial arm of the bank in with the investment banking arm with the bank, with the trading desk, and the idea of them separating out their trading desks to appease the American markets, this really will send jobs abroad. It will send American jobs abroad as well as these companies spin off the trading desks, move them to London. And a lot of good financial regulation will hurt New York in the short term. Putting derivatives on public markets will hurt New York in the short term, but it is good for the financial markets. It is good for the economy. Getting rid of the proprietary trading desks does not seem to have very much of a benefit for the cost that it will create. Proprietary trading did not create the financial crisis. It is not at the root of the worst of these conflicts. That is opacity. The best way to manage them is to get the information out there. Having standalone proprietary trading desks, for example, that are the clients of investment banks, that's a conflict as well. You've got short sellers like John Paulson. He could be seen as running a proprietary trading desk. So that would be similar to what happens when the banks have to sell these things. And he certainly creates a conflict with the bank standing in the middle. So it doesn't solve the problem, but it does create significant costs.
Nicole Gelinas from the Conservative Manhattan Institute Think Tank with us on WNYC as we examine the disagreements between Mayor Bloomberg and President Obama on how the bank reform bills would affect New York. Also joining us now is Harry Moroz from the liberal think tank, the Drum Major Institute for Public Policy. Harry, welcome back to WNYC. Harry, are you there? All right. I don't know if Harry can hear me. I can't hear Harry. So.
Hello.
Oh, Harry, can you hear me?
I can, yep.
Okay, great to have you. I don't know if you have heard the beginning of the conversation here or if this is one of the Drum Major Institute's positions on this question of proprietary trading. This
yep.
seems to be perhaps the biggest disagreement between Mayor Bloomberg and President Obama, and for many people it can be a little bit technical, but
right.
the mayor says this has huge implications for jobs in New York and for the tax base in New York. Do you disagree with the mayor and agree with the president?
I would tend to agree with the president. I would say, I mean, this isn't an area of my expertise. I think the key thing is something Nicole mentioned about the short term benefits versus the long term benefits of financial reform. I think in the short term, some of these stricter regulations are going to impact tax revenue in New York City and require some churn in the economy, but in the long term, it's going to create a lot more stability for New York City and for the country as a whole.
Well, on that question of stability, Nicole, Paul Krugman suggests in his column today that reform actually should hurt the bankers because an oversized financial sector actually hurts the rest of the economy. He says excessive profits on Wall Street and the addiction to keeping them that high led to the unsustainable housing bubble. And anyway, the rich got richer in the last 20 years, wealth concentrated on Wall Street in the last 20 years, but the middle class stagnated all that time, here in New York like anywhere else. So the trickle-down theory didn't actually hold. How much of that would you say is true?
Part about reform shrinking the financial sector is true. Wall Street has quadrupled as a share of the American economy over the past 25 years, ever since the Reagan administration started this policy of bailing out the bondholders to big banks, so the too big to fail banks. That started in 1984 with Continental Illinois Bank. Ever since then, lenders have known they can lend money to these big financial institutions. They are not at risk of losses. And so the finance has gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. And it worries me when the mayor says things like, we need this money to pay firefighters and police and so forth, because we cannot depend on an ever-growing Wall Street to pay our bills. You know, the city has to face up to the fact that Wall Street will shrink, should shrink. If it doesn't shrink, we've got even bigger problems down the road that we're going to be sitting here talking about in 5 years. And we've got to find a way to live with other industries that create very good jobs, but that don't throw off multi-million dollar bonuses, so that the city can have everything that it could possibly want and not have to make any decisions. And, you know, derivatives trading, this will cost several billion dollars worth of revenue to the banks every single year, but this is a price that is worth it. It is good for the economy, and if the city can't find a way for other businesses to come along and replace failed business lines, even failed businesses, then we've got big problems. You know, you create an environment for private industry, and you don't really care which one succeeds and which one doesn't.
Well, Harry, go ahead.
I do want to say something else. This isn't all about tax revenue. I mean, one of the important considerations is that we always hear this figure that the securities industry in New York City creates two jobs for every one job in that industry. That is unsustainable. I mean, and these jobs that are being created aren't good, well-paying jobs, building things or in manufacturing. They're retail and service industry jobs that aren't good. So I think we need to remember that one of the things that financial reform hopefully will cause New York economy is a reset away from a reliance on the securities industry to create other jobs.
But Harry, that may be the right thing to do by some people's lights, but that would mean less tax revenue for the police and the fire department and the teachers and the arts and so forth, wouldn't it? Because none of those other industries are going to have the huge sums of money paying the huge taxes that Wall Street does. So you're okay with that?
Sure. I mean, I think there's a way for us to muddle our way through, though. I mean, you know, the financial services industry is not going to disappear on the day that the financial reform package is passed. There are going to be decisions to be made. Sure, they're going to be tough, but it's not as if this happens overnight.
Right. Well, Nicole, on your support and the mayor's support, so he's with the president on this, of the exchanges for publicly trading the derivatives so that they're transparent. Why, if New York requires such transparency, but Shanghai were to let them do these shady deals in secret, why wouldn't the Goldman Sachs of the world send jobs to Shanghai to accommodate that, like you say they would to get out of a proprietary trading ban?
Well, they very well could and quite possibly will, but I think it's a question of, is the benefit worth that cost? I think when it comes to derivatives trading, yes, it is worth the cost. When it comes to spinning off proprietary trading desks, there is such nebulous benefit to that it is just not worth the cost.
The mayor made the argument, by the way, and I wonder if you agree with it, that if you set up these exchanges and require this transparency for derivatives, it would actually make banks come here rather than flee, because the safety would be reassuring, and the regulation in that sense would be seen as leading to profit stability that fosters profits rather than stability that fosters stagnation. Do you think that's just a political statement of rhetoric, or do you think that would really happen?
No, I think that could very well happen. For example, with this Goldman case, you have British politicians, German politicians saying that they're not going to do business anymore with Goldman, or they're calling on the people in power in government not to do business with Goldman. It is not good for the perception of American investment banking to be their effort in innovation and creativity is to create so many layers of opacity that they're making tremendous amounts of fees on this opacity based on their clients not having the information that they need. Goldman does not, whether this rises to the level of silver fraud, I guess we'll have to see when the case comes up, but it doesn't look very good. It has an off-putting desperation for fees that the world can see, that they were not treating their clients in a way that other people would want to be treated. And this is not the basis for a sustainable global banking system. And you've got to have respect for all of your clients and not just trying to adhere to the least, the minimum way to the letter of the law. So making it look like you can't trust our capital markets over the long term, that is not good for American financial markets. And it's not good for New York or Boston or Connecticut or New Jersey or the entire East Coast that really depends on the world's confidence in our markets. I mean, we should remember in the 30s when we got these rules, nobody liked them at the time, but they made our markets do well, and they made New York do well.
Listeners, we want your calls and web posts on this. What do you think the impact of bank reform would be on New York City and the whole New York area? And are you willing to put up with some sacrifices, at least in the short term, for reforms that you think are right? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Do you think there's a conflict between the anger that you or other people may experience at the banking sector and what's actually in the interest of New York's New York and vicinity? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And Nicole, before we take a break, just to follow up on what you were just saying, do the leaders of these countries talk to one another? Why wouldn't President Obama and Prime Minister Gordon Brown, et cetera, have an interest now in proposing simultaneous reforms to protect all our economies from over-the-top banking practices and prevent a race to the bottom by setting up these competing systems in different countries?
Well, they do talk to each other, and they have laid out putting these derivatives on exchanges as a very broad principle in all of these G20 negotiations. In some ways, it's a matter of who moves first. If we do it, London will feel more confident in doing it. But there is huge short-term temptation here. I mean, cities know that if they allow these bilateral contracts to continue, if they don't put these derivatives on exchanges, they could get a short-term boost in jobs. So, I mean, it's the same thing with anything. Like, if you're a city and you put your tax rate to zero, you'll do well for a while, but at some point you're not going to be able to borrow anymore and you're not going to have public services. So there should be some global competition on these things, but we should keep in mind, there's always short-term political considerations, but you should be doing the right long-term thing for your economy too. And not putting these things on exchanges just sets the stage for the next bailouts.
We'll continue in a minute with Nicole Gelinas from the Manhattan Institute and Harry Moroz from the Drum Major Institute, and your calls and comments. Are you surprised our lines are already full? So don't call us, but go to our webpage and post your comment at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show as we finish off the week doing what we've been doing all week at this time, trying to dig deep below the political rhetoric in the bank reform debate to illuminate the underlying economics and uncertainties, and in today's case, the effect of New York on New York of these proposed national reforms. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. By the way, today is the fifth anniversary of YouTube. Did you know that? The first ever YouTube video was posted 5 years ago today. And on our website today, we are making a list of your favorite YouTube videos of all time. So post your single favorite YouTube video to WNYC.org. And on Monday's show, we'll see what was hot on the list and talk about how 5 years of YouTube have changed the culture. One of my producers listed Charlie Bit My Finger as her favorite video. There have got to be better ones than that. So post your favorite YouTube video of all time, just the title. You don't have to find the link to our page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. As we continue to talk about financial reform as proposed by the president, as disagreed upon by Mayor Bloomberg, and here is the president from yesterday tying Main Street and Wall Street interests together and needing these reforms, then the mayor flipping the idea.
This is the central lesson not only of this crisis, but of our history. It's what I said when I spoke here 2 years ago. Because ultimately, there is no dividing line between Main Street and Wall Street. We will rise or we will fall together as one nation.
As the president said, the success of Wall Street and Main Street in our city and in our nation, the success of both of them are inextricably linked. One supports the other. The financial services industry is made up of people who live and work in our neighborhoods and who shop on our main streets. So if regulation and higher taxes lead to fewer jobs on Wall Street, that will mean fewer jobs for middle-class communities across the country.
And Nicole Gelinas, I know you have to go in half a minute. You want to give us a last thought as you head out the door on where you think this should head in Washington?
Sure. I think that we had two problems. Too much debt, and that's because the government has long said these financial institutions don't have to put very much capital down behind anything that's rated AAA, fix that with a hard leverage ratio, and fix these credit default swaps and other derivatives so that they too trade and they too have some borrowing limits. And you fixed 80% of the problem. Is that bad for New York in the short term? Sure, we'll have lower tax revenues, but we will adjust. If we don't, then we've got bigger problems than this.
Nicole Gelinas from the Manhattan Institute and their City Journal and author of the book After the Fall, Saving Capitalism from Wall Street and Washington. Thank you very much
for
being
on. Thank you, Harry.
Harry Morose from the liberal think tank, the Drum Major Institute, is still with us. And Harry, let's talk about some of the politics. Mayor Bloomberg literally set up a soapbox for himself in Times Square yesterday to talk back to President Obama's Wall Street speech. One way to look at this is that the city's richest man was defending the six institutions that control two-thirds of the nation's capital and threatening on their behalf to export jobs overseas, just as he uses offshore banking for his own investments. We often see Mayor Bloomberg as an independent actor devoid of politics, but I wonder if this is a case where he's just too inside his own interests and worldview.
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about that, and I think that the statement that we just heard is kind of revealing. At the beginning of the show, when I first came on, you were talking about banning proprietary trading. In the mayor's comment, however, he's talking about regulation and higher taxes. So, when he's been attacking the financial reform bill, he's been using more expansive language. He hasn't been talking about agreeing with 90% of what is in the package. He's been talking about higher taxes and more regulation.
Well, on the regulation, one of the things that he argues is to not make the banks smaller, because we already have something to regulate that, which is antitrust laws.
Right.
What would you say to his argument there?
Well, I think it's the classic argument we kind of know in our hearts, that when you have just a few institutions that dominate the market, they not only pervert free market principles, but they end up getting political power. They end up being able to go to Washington and say, look, I'm too big to fail. I mean, the origin of too big to fail is a political power.
Here's Joanne in Hastings-on-Hudson, who says, in some respects, on overseas markets, they're more strict. Right, Joanne?
Yes, absolutely. They don't allow short selling.
They don't allow any short selling? You can't bet against something going
on. A man from the Austrian told me that in Austria they don't allow short selling. I don't know about Iceland and other places, but if Mayor Bloomberg is worried about moving to Europe, I think that their exchanges wouldn't allow some of the practices that have gone on here. Paulson wouldn't make out so well.
Joanne, thank you for your call. I wonder if anybody else wants to call up, maybe if you have experience in trading, and tell us if that's true. I'd be surprised if that's true, actually, that whole countries' exchanges don't prohibit short selling, which means basically just betting that something's going to lose value. Harry, do you know?
I agree with you. I doubt that's true. I mean, one proposal that's been kicked around in the United States is this idea of the uptick rule, that before you can short sell a stock, it has to increase in value. So there are some reforms that don't involve completely banning short selling, which does have serve a purpose in the market. Although,
and sure enough, one of our producers is looking it up and says Austria did just extend a ban for another few months on short selling. On January 20th, Austria's financial market watchdog called FMA extended a ban through April. So maybe they're having that debate right now. Maybe, again, some trader could call up and tell us how that would work. How can you only bet on things to go up? I'm not sure that I, as someone who doesn't work in that business, quite understand that. From our comments page, Julian from Manhattan, any investor knows a diversified portfolio is the best hedge against future debacles. It's a tragedy that we've allowed the financial industry to provide 40% of our tax revenues in New York. If we keep going on our present path, where will all the, quote, menial workers who actually make the city run come from? They've already been pushed far from the center and will be pushed further away as soon as the economy improves enough to allow more gentrification. So that's one comment. On the other hand, somebody else posts on our board, and I'm calling this up, Harry, and this is kind of a challenge to what you were saying. And it says, forgive me, I had this in front of me, but I don't anymore. This says, if Wall Street is reduced, what will be left in New York City to support jobs and the tax base? And please don't tell us tourism and the fashion and entertainment industries, writes Steve from Manhattan.
So Wall Street makes up 20% or so of private sector jobs. It's certainly an important industry for New York, and we should protect it to a certain extent. On the other hand, I mean, as I said before, financial reform, we're not talking about wiping out Wall Street completely. It's still going to be important to New York. People are still going to come to New York to, you know, because it has been so historically important to the financial services industry. But let's not forget that New York does have a diverse economy outside of Wall Street. And that does involve, you know, the fashion industry, but it also involves small manufacturers. And I think, you know, when we put too much of our focus on the financial services industry, we stop asking questions like, how do we rebuild small manufacturers in New York?
And a little more on the Austrian short-selling ban, as our team continues to look into it. This says, more specifically, the short-selling ban applies only to two banks and two insurance firms over there in an effort to help them withstand bear market pressures. And David in Manhattan is a securities professional who's calling in on this, too. Hi, David. If nothing else, we're going to clear up what they do in Austria, if not the United States. Hi.
Right. I can't speak specifically to Austria, but I am aware of a couple of stocks that are on the restricted list. But there's quite a robust short-selling and securities lending industry around the world, nearly all European countries, as well as in Asia, although India and Singapore go back and forth on regulating it at various levels at various times. But short-selling gets a bad rap, but it actually reduces volatility in the market because those short sellers have an incentive to buy the security when it's seen a large drop, and they often are the first buyers to step into a free fall.
Thank you for calling and giving us that perspective. Eli in Toms River wants to flip this whole idea of what we're saying about the banks. Right, Eli?
Yes, I mean, think about it. Whatever is being thrown at Wall Street should be thrown at the federal government tenfold. If there's anyone that's doing unsustainable economic practices, it is the American federal government. If there's anyone that keeps coming back to the taxpayers for a bailout, it is the American federal government. The American federal government is not a wealth creator. Wall Street creates enormous wealth, not only for themselves, but it's trickle-down wealth that goes all over the place. The federal government does not earn money. The federal government is always taxing the people. Taxes are, in essence, taxpayer bailouts. All taxes are, and by definition. And the federal government is always coming back to taxpayers for bailouts. If there is truly one entity in the entire world that is too big to fail, it is the American federal government. Their economic practices are risky, unsustainable. They have no plan whatsoever for recovering all the money that they've spent, whether it was in stimulus or in other. The only money that they got back was the TARP, was most of the TARP money, which Wall Street took. They paid it back with interest, most of it, and they probably will end up paying back the rest of it. Wall Street pays so much in taxes, it's unbelievable amount of taxes they pay, way more than they got in their bailout. In essence, they did not get a bailout from the taxpayers. They got money back that they paid in taxes previously. They got it back as a temporary bailout, which they ended up paying back with interest. Everything that's being thrown out of Wall Street should be thrown at the federal government tenfold.
Interesting. And Eli, I understand your anger at the government, and I'm curious to get an anger gauge on you. Are you also angry at Wall Street? Are you in touch with your anger at Wall Street as much as you are at your anger against the federal government for having done these irresponsible things that has caused so much economic damage to so many regular Americans?
You know, under normal circumstances, I would say yes. Under normal circumstances, I'm very against fraud. I live my life very carefully to make sure that every single transaction that I do is within the law. I make sure my taxes are completely in order. I do as much as I can, and I expect everyone else to live that way also. And it's unfair when companies, you know, spend billions of dollars illegally, illicitly, crooked ways, sometimes within the law, sometimes against the law. And under normal circumstances, I certainly would want Wall Street to be regulated and to be kept in check, just to make sure that they're being honest with their clients under normal circumstances. But we're dealing over here in with a situation where the federal government is so out of control that everything is being misplaced over here by concentrating on Wall Street. Wall Street is a wealth generator. They produce jobs without coming onto the taxpayers. They produce wealth for this country, and there's no one company on Wall Street, even all the companies on Wall Street combined, do not come close to the danger of the federal government failing.
Eli, thank you for your call. I appreciate it a lot. And Harry Morose, I'll give you the last word on this, and then we're going to be out of time. When he talks about the federal government being the ultimate unsustainable business model, and we could go into all the details about deficit and debt that everybody knows. What about that?
I think there are two things to remember. First, I think the caller is kind of approaching dangerous territory in conflating two different issues, one being bailing out Wall Street and the other being making it work better. I think putting the blame on the federal government for unsustainable business practices
Well, he's not blaming them for Wall Street. He's just saying the federal government itself is based on an unsustainable business model, the way we're taxing and spending and borrowing.
I disagree with that, with the fundamental principle. I mean, I think the reason why Wall Street succeeds is, in fact, because the federal government helps it succeed. The conditions for wealth creation in this country are created by the federal government.
Harry Morose from the Drum Major Institute for Public Policy. He's a research associate there. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Ryan.
And thanks for all your calls and comments on this all week long. Keep the conversation going on our webpage at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And when we continue in a minute, we will turn to myths about bilingualism. And we'll take phone calls from people who are bilingual. You'll hear what some of those myths about bilingualism, according to the author of a new book, are. Stay with us.